Welcome to Tune In 2022. This is the reading for Sagittarius and Sagittarius Rising and maybe even Sag Moon. I'm recording on the evening of the 28th of December. Sag is the 11th sign that I am doing. All that remains after this one is Pisces. And I'm here to tell you as much as I can about your astrology for 2022 and maybe a bit beyond. 20 and 21 were almost the same year astrologically, in that everything in 21 had its firm rooted origins in the previous year that was marked by things like the explosion of Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn and a number of other things, including, though, particularly the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in Aquarius. Aquarius is a sign that plays strongly into your reading this year. Though I want to start with just a quick overview of what Sagittarius is and how the Sag chart is laid out and what that's about at this time. So Sagittarius is the sign that most vividly describes its astronomical contents. It's absolutely a fascinating sign in this regard, as it is the home of the core of our galaxy and also the supergalactic center, the actual supergalactic center in our region of space, which is called the Great Attractor. Both of these are in mid or late Sag. And Sag is the ancient sign of all things spiritual, exotic, weird, divine, far away, unexplainable. And that certainly describes the Great Attractor and the galactic core. So there's a very powerful sense of largesse around this sign and a sense of special destiny and also an aloof quality because its natives feel the reality of things far, far beyond this world. Yet what is equally interesting is that in the houses that ground activity and thought, both of these are Saturn-ruled signs, whereas your sign is a Jupiter-ruled sign. The tone of your chart, of your solar chart, what I think of as the archetypal chart for Sagittarius, changes very quickly the moment we leave your sign, and we end up not in a region of the zodiac associated with what is distant, strange, exotic, divine, but rather what is very mundane and part of the structure of society. That would be Capricorn in the second, and then a similar condition with Aquarius in the third, which is indicative of a kind of a proper approach to your thought patterns. Aquarius really is a conventional quality, much more than it is a strange or exotic one. And so there seems to, or idiosyncratic, as it's often made out to be. It can be, but it generally is not, though it can see itself that way. And so it seems in many ways that Sagittarius has this very potent exotic quality to it, and then quickly goes into a kind of a reaction of wanting to, you know, fully integrate one's values and thought systems with the prevailing ones on the planet. And so a lot of the highly unusual qualities of Sagittarius can get lost basically in the need to feel normal. Though that's not really you. And that need to feel normal and to align your values with that of those of your family and the way things are, you might say, has been heavily challenged by the presence of Pluto moving through your second house. Although this can have a dismantling quality to it, and yet at the same time it can also have a kind of an obsessive quality to it. And you know, you'll know which way you've gone, and maybe my referencing this tension between all that is very wild, weird, unusual, and special versus all that is acceptable, normal, mundane, concrete, and the same as it was yesterday is some real tension that you carry around. And there are many times where you are compensating for the difference between these two inner polarities that you possess. And it would make an interesting study to go back to around 2008 when Pluto first entered Capricorn. And by the way, it was in Sagittarius from about 1994-95, clear through 2008. So it had maybe a 12 or 13 year run through Sagittarius, which in many ways was the top story in astrology all of that time. And when Pluto changed signs in 2008, we might consider what the before and after moment was, if you're old enough to remember that. You probably are. And what the economic crisis of that time led you to do, and the corporate rearrangement and the collapse of banking, seemingly anyway, collapse of banking and insurance and all those bailouts, TARP and all that stuff, changed the world. And it changed your approach to living and potentially made you a lot more conservative than you would normally be. And there is a real question of what you do with your unparalleled drive to be a free being and to live your values and your truth your particular way. So one of the consequences of Pluto and then followed by Saturn between 2017, and early 2020, Saturn had quite a long involvement with Capricorn, is what changed in that time? Or have you seen yourself go more toward striving to be normal, let's say closer to the values of your family, or have you striven to be independent and free of those values? And have you sifted and sorted through them carefully? And I would suggest here in this last full year of Pluto in Capricorn that you conduct a kind of a review of what occurred. Now, that review is happening as the year begins in the form of a very unusual Venus retrograde in Capricorn. This really got cooking December 11th with the conjunction of Venus to Pluto. Then the retrograde occurs on the 19th, and then there was a second conjunction of Venus to Pluto that pretty much spanned between the 24th and the 27th, like a three-day conjunction of this very normally quickly moving planet. And there is some deep transformation of values that is going on for you. That is fair to say with the Venus retrograde making these conjunctions to Pluto. I think of it, and I've described it in many of the other signs, as being a review of particularly the second half, let's say what transpired from about 2012 onward of Pluto in Capricorn, and a review and a reassessment of a number of things. I mean, Venus represents values generally. It represents priorities. It represents that which we're attached to and attracted to. And then it has two zones of your chart that it represents, one representing your work and your health. That's the sixth, Taurus. And then one representing your presentation of yourself to the public. And it would seem as if both of these facets of your life, again, the work and well-being of the sixth, and the public presentation of the 11th. First of all, they're closely related because they're ruled by the same planet, even though they seem to express themselves in pretty wildly different areas of life. But you do strive for some consistency there, even if it's maintained in different ways, you know, Taurus being a fixed earth sign, Libra being a cardinal air sign. In any event, all of these things are up for a reevaluation, so that we begin the year with a profound reevaluation of your priorities. And I would say that if you're in that mode, commit to sticking with it for a few months. The Venus retrograde finally... Well, Venus direct happens about 129, and then the retrograde process winds up completely with a conjunction of Venus, Mars, and Pluto in the second house. And so there's something new, and there's something that you're figuring out. Mars has a little ways to go to even get near Capricorn, but by the time Venus is done being retrograde and comes back to this all-important third conjunction to Pluto, Mars is going to be there as well. And so there is something that is added to the equation. It is very clear that you learn something if you undertake a reevaluation. And so I would express this as a bold, courageous... I am fond of the fourth step, fearless and searching moral inventory about what is important to you, what is necessary to you. There are many references to the past in your value structure. It is my, let's say, observation that revolutionaries need strong Capricorn. You certainly have that right now. And the references to the past can take you deeper and deeper into your personal history and what has been passed along to you down the decades, down the centuries, down the generations of a kind of inheritance that could well be an inheritance of wisdom, but this will really require you to center your thought process on looking well beyond appearances and beyond what can really be researched. One of the influences, Pholus, is the kind of thing that you can go on to Ancestry after you've donated your DNA to the machine and look back about as far, for most people anyway, as Pholus goes, four generations. So, you know, if you're lucky, you know, you go back five or six on a thing like Ancestry. But Quasar goes back far, far further than any of these metrics and tools can assess and talks about not the the personal origins, but your deepest, racial. In other words, like your story of the human race or your story of your soul group. So genuine inventory, investigation, understanding of your priorities. And one of the things that's happened in the last 2 years is people have had their heads rearranged about what's important. And I've seen a lot of people completely dispense with what they swore were their highest priorities leading up till 2020. The question is, how much or how little duress did it take for you to let go of things that were important to you? And when you figure out that they remain important even after this kind of whirlwind that we've been through, what then do you do? So you have a lot of help here. Venus, Mars, and Pluto, particularly. All right, third house. This is the house of thought forms and thought patterns. And here we enter a region of your chart that's, I think, calling for true, true reflection, particularly about your psychological patterns. So Sagittarius is said to be a mutable sign, but it's unusually fixed for a mutable sign. This is the curious thing about, one of the curious things about Sag. And I think that among the houses in the solar chart, which again is the archetypal chart for Sagittarius, not for any one person, but for the sign itself, which is what I'm reading, house number 3 is Aquarius and is a fixed sign. The third house, I know it gets shit talk like all the cadent houses, 3, 6, 9, and 12 by classical astrologers, but it would seem that these cadent houses have become much more important through the course of history, and particularly our work-oriented, communication-oriented world. And the third is your house of communication and commerce. It is the house associated with siblings, if you have any, and it is the house associated with your, essentially your mental environment. It's an inner environment, and then it also can have metaphor in the commerce environment that you are in, the stores you shop in and the people you know. And my assessment of where the third house ends is when you are traveling beyond the distance to your home where you don't know people's names. Now, I don't know how many people know people's names where they shop, but even if you go into a supermarket where you don't really know any of the cashiers or managers on a first-name basis, you're going to run into people that you know and who will know you. So that's the third house. It's fairly close to home, but it's also so close to home that it is your brain pattern. It is the way that you think and the way that you process your reality. And you have Aquarius here, and Aquarius is very given to fixing patterns. That's what it is the fixed sign of. It is the fixed sign of all forms of patterns. When we put it in the third, it's an obvious metaphor for thought patterns. And the challenge of Aquarius on the third is making sure that you are able to continually reevaluate and be taking in new observations and new sensory information and coming up with an ongoing new evaluation of your world so that you're actually in your environment. You're not just confronted by nonstop samskaras, latent past impressions that you may have. And there was a monumental event in Aquarius at the very end of last year on the 21st, which was a combination of Jupiter and Saturn. It was really quite a thing. And while astrology was quite giddy about the possibilities, the downside of that was that There has been a lot of fixed thinking that is very trendy. And this idea that I've evaluated everything, I don't need any more information, or don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me, I don't want to know, I don't want to find out, or lazy thinking, which in the form of Aquarius with Jupiter and Saturn, it will come from two ways. One, style, the fashion. It's the fashion of the world right now to not want to think about anything. We're so overwhelmed, and you can't ever really know the truth and all that stuff. That's Jupiter and Aquarius, among other things that can represent. And Saturn is saying, just accept what authority says. Now, either of these placements, and particularly the conjunction of the two of them, could jar you out of that fairly easily if you wanted to be. It is a positively beautiful monument to independent thinking, potentially, to have Jupiter and Saturn conjunct in the third house. But it is equally a monument to A, think what everyone else is thinking, and B, just think what I'm told the right thing is without actually asking questions. And Aquarius is supposed to be the sign of science, and science is a process of inquiry. It's a process of tearing down old beliefs. It's not, nothing in science is true for long. And but there is the best knowledge, and then there's knowledge of the history, and there's knowledge of how we got from one place to another. But nothing is true for long, and in that paradigm, right? And truth really cannot be found through the scientific paradigm. We just get a bunch of plateaus, but those plateaus have been largely co-opted by interests other than those that are seeking the truth. And so anyway, the challenge here is making sure that you are in a position to think for yourself at all times, and never doing something because someone else is doing it. That may sound like a tall order, but it's like my fourth grade teacher said, well, if everybody was jumping off of a bridge, would you jump off of a bridge too? Sadly, an apt metaphor for our time in history. So Saturn's presence in this house is driving you to be disciplined. It is driving you to be independent at its best, if you honor the Saturn principle. And it is very strong in Aquarius, driving you to be independent, driving you to be thorough in your thinking, to think things through from a lot of different angles, and to not be overly conclusive. There's a habit of thought where people think they think something through, and then they get to a point where they think they have the answer, and then they reach a space of what Carlos Castaneda called clarity, and then that's it. Everything stops. Well, there needs to be an ongoing reevaluation, and this takes discipline. It takes persistence, and it takes confronting your own fears. An interesting theme of Saturn generally, and Saturn in the third place, is to think independently requires a confrontation with fear. This is a challenging thing for some people. And the confrontation is not hiding the fear, running around the fear, denying the fear, rationalizing the fear, whatever. It is an actual engagement, an actual confrontation. So you've got this, and it's a kind of an anchor. And it's going to serve you well, I think, if you remember not to fall for the pitfalls of Saturn and Aquarius. And, what is probably fairly well habituated year for many people of Jupiter in Aquarius, which is Jupiter in Aquarius is the right thing is what I think everyone else thinks. The problem with this is that most of the time we have no idea what everyone else thinks, because they don't tell you what they think. They're acting a certain way and not generally revealing their doubts. Okay. So Saturn in Aquarius has some important alignments to the work you're doing, bookmark that. We'll probably get to that in the second segment when I cover most of the next quadrant. But let's go to the fourth place here, fourth house, which is Pisces in archetypal Sagittarius, also called the fourth solar house, or if you're Sag rising, the fourth whole sign house. And this is a rather interesting and busy place right now. The fourth is the house where we decide what makes us feel safe. It's also the ancient house of fathers. It represents the four walls that we live in. It can represent the foundation. It also represents the emotional body. And there can be residue from the family, of course, that's the nature of emotions. There can be residue from the family in the fourth place. And with Pisces, that is likely to linger around, right? You can't really drain a lake. If someone, you know, puts 1,000 pounds of purple coloring into a lake, it's going to take a while for that to break down, filter through, and be flushed out. So that's more like the nature of Pisces. And there's a lot happening here. Up until this point, the two major influences were Neptune, a very Piscean amplifier, and Nessus, perhaps the most Neptunian of the centaur planets. It's a Neptune crosser, and it is associated with things of a foggy nature, responsibility that is foggy, and assessment of events that is foggy, and then also a sense of cause and effect where there are gaps, where things can have causes can have effects that reach all the way around the bend and are then not traceable or seemingly not traceable back to their source. And there's a lot about responsibility, but there's also a lot about the fear, this kind of burning concern about the fear of consequences, and placing this in a house that's associated with your emotional confidence and with your sense of your sense of belonging in many ways is mediated in the fourth house. This is a challenging influence to have there, and it can lead you to doubt whether you feel safe in any way, whether you feel safe at any time, even if you have every reason to. So what Nessus is calling for is an understanding of why things happen the way they happen. And it's also calling for some scrupulous honesty in terms of what you know and what you do with what you know. And that's not easy with Pisces in the fourth. And it's particularly not easy with Neptune in the fourth because there is this a kind of cloud of deception that can follow Neptune around. And it can be a kind of a delusional or denial-oriented influence. And so one of the messages coming out of your fourth house is it's not a good idea to make your total evaluation of things based on some emotional level. This is not a good time in your personal history to be making gut evaluations. It is not a good time to go on hunches, and it may be a good time to do a long-term study, sorting out false intuition from true intuition. This is a subject that needs to be written about, and if it has been, it hasn't been lately that I've ever seen, but it is possible to have quite a bit of false intuition coming out of Pisces in the fourth house that is not necessarily going to lead you to the correct conclusion. And now, overnight tonight, we begin essentially a new era in astrological history with Jupiter's ingress into Pisces, which is going to emphasize these things and magnify them. Let's talk about that after a short break. This is, by the way, the sound of Jupiter, which will then eventually have some in silico music added to it. Back in a bit. A little Jupiter with Dan Grimsland on a very heavily processed but very exciting sound of a bass guitar. So there have for years been this collection of influences in your fourth place that are cautioning about deciding things on hunches and what you think is your intuition and what you think are your feelings. I don't really ever want to lead anyone to distrust themselves, but short of saying anything like that, I would say that what you need are multiple means of verification, and where Neptune and Pisces are concerned, it's vitally important that you give your assessments the test of time, that you make evaluations, and then you evaluate whether you got it right, or you may come to a conclusion or observation and then put that into, trial mode for a year or so before, absolutely assume you're right. Now, this would also suggest that it would be a good time to evaluate things that you have been thinking about for a year or two or three. I'm aware that that the past 2 years have rather unfairly and unnecessarily shuffled the deck and put a lot of people under duress, and have led to the widest scale outbreak of mental illness, social anxiety, and every other kind of creeping thought late at night. I mean, there's a lot of people who had no problems before this are suddenly finding themselves drinking heavily. So Jupiter comes along, and it is going to magnify the material of the fourth house. And that is going to start with in March, but during a very eventful time in all of our lives, the first week of March, Jupiter arrives at Nessus and is likely to enlarge your sense of something And whatever that is, like, please write this down. I don't know if anybody remembers the things I say months later, but in particular, the region of March 1st through 5th is a very big time for your most personal reevaluations. It's the time of the Venus Mars Pluto conjunction on in your third, and it is the time of Jupiter conjunct Nessus in your fourth, and then the Sun is conjunct Eris in your fifth, and it's just a lot of stuff going on right at that time, and it's going to be a big wake up Springfest weekend. So when you know you're hanging around there in early March and you're noticing what is emphasized, what is exaggerated, what is made bigger, rather than either avoiding it or completely subsuming yourself to it, evaluate it or observe. First of all, observe. What am I concerned about? What am I thinking about? What is on my mind? What is coming bubbling up through my emotional reality? And this can be coming from a very deep place. And you can assume it's true because it feels like it's coming from a very deep place, or you can assume whatever's going on, it's coming up for evaluation of whether it's true. I much prefer that as a therapy modality, not so much assuming that what you might feel or think is true, but rather placing it in a in an observation area where you can think about, talk about, evaluate, write it down. Now, there is such a morass created by Jupiter moving first through Nessus and then right into a couple of months later, right into Neptune, that it may be perfectly overwhelming at this time. And I think also too much critical thought is likely to go against the zeitgeist. Critical thought's already against the zeitgeist. Cogent writing is already offensive. Too long to read, and everyone is flattened onto the same, the same level. You know, Joan Didion and your average blogger. And the tidal wave represented by Jupiter, Neptune, is so powerful that it could completely obviate critical thought, which is not a good idea. So pay special attention with your ruling planet, Jupiter, moving through the fourth house. And again, it's exciting. This begins just in a couple of hours as I am recording. The moon is in Scorpio. I guess I waited out a moon void. I don't usually go and like do something the day that I've got one of these readings, but I did. Now I come in and check the chart. The moon just entered Scorpio, and Jupiter is lingering within the last three arc minutes of Aquarius, and won't be back for 11 more years, at 29:57, passing through this all-important last degree. So this happens. Now, fifth place. This is a kind of a hot spot that's much more tangible than these, in a sense, abstractions of who you are. We come out of abstract mode in any part of the chart where Aries is involved, because Aries, by its very nature, drives self-actualization. Aries is the sign of I am, could also be said to be the sign of who am I, could state it as a question or as a statement. And you have this in the fifth house, fifth place of your solar chart, or fifth whole sign house if you're Sag rising. And what this says is that you're going to seek your identity in all things of the nature of the fifth house, which is about experience, which is about the risks you take to have the happiness you want. It's about a very wholesome form of sex, which is the kind that teenagers and young people and artists like to have, which is sex for creativity, pleasure, passion, experimentation, creation, rather than the sex of obligation. That's more of an eighth house matter. And so in the fifth, we preserve a measure of play in all things. And this is one of the houses, I think, that makes Sagittarius the most of what it is, that you can, when you're not caught up in whether your family thinks what you're doing is right, you can be quite independent if it means having fun and being the creative entity that you want to be. And for you, fun and art studio sex or teenage sex or the passionate exploration of what gives you pleasure, it's essential to understand that this drives and is one and the same as your self-actualization, your actual growth into who you are becoming. So this is not any kind of a superfluous thing or some sundry concept laying around, but rather your growth engine. Now, there are planets in Aries right now. Eris has been a long-term presence for nearly a century, so it predates almost the birth of any person alive on the planet in a very short time. I think it goes in 26, so people who are in their 90s have Eris and Pisces late in their late 90s, but almost everyone alive on the planet has Eris and Aries. And this is an artifact of a time we're still living through, which is having our sense of individual consciousness completely dismantled and being returned to a pseudo-tribal state. So this is potentially a conformist element, and it's also cautionary that you really commit to doing what's right for you and making up your mind about what you want to do in life. Now, Eris is an old story, but can't be told too many times. What is newer of a presence in Aries is Chiron. That arrives in around 2018. We might wonder what the transformation for you was. Chiron is a Sagittarian type of influence. I don't think it rules Sagittarius, but I think that it is emblematic of the quest version of Chiron. That's a Sagittarian thing. And in the fifth, it is first of all wanting to put together the tatters and fragments that we have been reduced to by over-immersion in digital consciousness. So I think that if you're making art, there's very few forms of art left that are not somehow mingled up with the digital realm. Though the key to using technology in a way that is self-affirming and self-actualizing rather than self-negating is to stay awake and stay creative, and that is Chiron's specialty. But Chiron wants physical experiences, and physical experiences where there is some daring, where there's some taking a chance to attain whatever goal it might be. That can be healing. It's a Chiron thing. It can be the journey from one idea to the next. It can be your self-development as any form of creative creative entity, and your self-creative idea. It's a very powerful sexual element to Chiron in the fifth house, because Chiron in the fifth house wants experiences. And that means it does not want purely theoretical in silico experiences. It wants actual experiences, and when Chiron in the fifth is happy, it's doing a lot of going and getting them. Now, there's another influence here in the fifth, which is a newer, slower, basically permanent for the foreseeable future, like 20-year influence, and that's called Salacia in the fifth house. And Salacia adds a quality that Chiron does not necessarily of itself add, or which can kind of be subverted by, I would say, the misuse of Chiron's power. But that's the maturity element, and Chiron really should call for that. Chiron is certainly a maturing process, and when someone reaches their Chiron return at age 50, that's a major developmental stage. But Salacia emphasizes the fact that the psyche matures in parallel with sexual maturity. And sexual maturity is not really a thing. When was the last time you heard those words together? Have you ever heard those words together? Except in the case of an adolescent becomes sexually mature and they can have a baby, except that they in so doing, create one of the biggest areas of controversy in society, where nobody has a nice thing to say. Sexual maturity means growth, healing, self-acceptance, experimentation. And there needs to be, I think, with Chiron Aries 5, a sense that this all does start with you and come back to you. And it is nice when other people are involved, but let's not delude ourselves and think that sex is in some way about someone else in the first instance and the last. Now, there's a lot of ways to slice this onion up. But we could say that, skipping aside total generalizations for the entire human race, the fifth Aries is going to lead to this propensity. And so if you're thinking that it's all about somebody else, you might want to do some self-therapy around that and argue the other side, right? It's always good to be able to present two or three sides of the case. But the case being made by astrology is one about healing and maturity, Chiron and Salacia. And additionally, reconstructing our completely fragmented, tattered, shattered self-image in this kaleidoscopic mirror of digital technology. We have become different people. And what I see these influences doing is with all of your might wanting to be a whole person. And my sense is that you're going to find that wholeness, or the path to that wholeness, or the trailhead to the path to that wholeness, or that enterprise or that journey in the activities of the fifth. That is to say, anything related to, classically speaking, games of chance, or that which is the kind of fun, the absorbed fun that children like to have that adults can rarely have. It's like a big surprise if they break out a box of magic markers and they're drawing and then suddenly they're like totally into it. Like, that's little kids, right? Well, yeah, I don't know. Get out the finger paints. I have wanted to do that for a long time and have not done that, but now I'm going to, in honor of Sagittarius. So pleasure, play, games, risks, chances, art studio, fucking like a teenager, curiosity, that's a fifth house thing, all in the style of Aries. You're on an investigation of who you are, and it's different from the second house of Capricorn, which is like, you are what these other people are. Different than the third house. You think what these other people think, unless you really don't. Fourth house is saying, well, I'm not so sure that this is a very safe planet. Maybe not going to do too much. But fifth house is saying, fuck safety and what they think and what they want and who they think I am and all that stuff. I'm going to take the chance. I'm going to risk and have the pleasure of being myself. I would caution you, there is endless propaganda about this. It is sadly a very easy responsibility for people to want to give up their self-actualization and their sense of responsibility for their own beingness and defining their own or defining their own experiment into who they are. The propaganda is coming at us nonstop, around the clock. All this stuff coming out of Aquarius, conceptually, not Aquarian people, but the concept of Aquarius, do what we say for you is the right thing. Aries in the fifth, especially with Chiron, just laughs at that. All right, back in a bit. Let's check in with the sixth house and then spend the rest of our reading discussing other stuff going on in the mutable signs. One thing is that 2022 is a much bigger year for the mutable signs than really any of the past even 3 years. Say, for example, since Saturn left Sagittarius, I think in late 17, and now we're going to get a lot of activity in the mutable signs, beginning with Jupiter showing up in Pisces overnight tonight. Again, 28th to 29th. But sixth house. All right. So we talked about the fifth, the self-actualizing drive with Aries there. You could not want better than to have Aries on the fifth. And for you, I assure you, it is your grounding, your art, your experimental quality, and you're the part where you reach the place where your need for adventure is undeniable, like oxygen, food, kitty cats, whatever may be undeniably necessary in your life. The sixth house is your house of well-being. End of work. I have big news for you. You are a natural person. You are not the kind of person who wants nanotechnological solutions to nutrition. You probably still think that broccoli is good food. You don't need to have anything powdered up or anything like that. So remember that. You have it in you to be an incredibly stable person in your health if you are nourishing your body with the right stuff and remembering your creature comforts. Taurus is all about orienting on creature comforts. This is a whole different thing than it was 100 years ago. I happen to know a little bit about life in the early 20th century, and boy, do we have creature comforts now that were unheard of, even by princes and princesses and queens and kings and people, dukes and stuff, and in previous times. You know, most of the poorest among us can take a hot shower. Not all. So anyway, where there's Taurus, there's always a reminder for good food, good water, creature comforts, and making sure that you do your thing outside. This is an important part of your health and your balance. Now, as far as work is concerned, that's another important element of the sixth house. You want something solid, stable, and that is grounded in your values and in your priorities. You lean a little conservative here. You don't necessarily want to be too experimental around your work. You could afford to be a lot more experimental. And one of the reminders of being more experimental and seeking less stability and more seeking actual experience and experimental involvement, similar to the fifth, actually, is Uranus in Taurus. So this is this saying, first of all, it represents the disruption to work patterns that we're currently going through. It's going to last a while. And it also represents the technological environment taking over the work environment. That's a big one. And the thing that concerns me the most about Uranus and Taurus, besides the other thing that concerns me the most, is that that values are shifting so radically and so rapidly that no one can keep track. And when no one can keep track, a lot of people get fooled. Okay. Is the imposition of technology on health, so-called health. Look this up. I promise you I'm not the fat guy on Twitter writing in bed that Trump talked about. There is an attempt right now to entirely merge what we call the health system with the digital sphere, such that people will be getting diagnosed by app. They already are. There's already a real big problem of people going off and taking their bullshit antibodies tests and then thinking that they've got a deadly disease or rushing to the hospital and clogging the emergency room. What a wonderful idea. They're going to telemedicine, nanotechnology, gene therapy as the cure for everything instead of miso, kimchi, generally other good diet, fresh air, making friends with a rock, this kind of thing. Taking care of your body. Okay, so those are two huge issues of concern with Uranus in Taurus generally, but specifically the health issue is for you. And then the value of work. Here's a really serious issue that is yours because you've got Uranus, radical changes in Taurus, value, not just values, but value. An ounce of silver is worth this much. Bitcoin is worth this much. And the sixth, your work. You're going to need to really focus this and work it out. You first of all have to do work that you perceive is of value. No getting around it. There's no way you can do something that you determine is detrimental to the environment or quality of life on the planet and be happy. There's no way you can conduct yourself in an environmentally destructive way and be happy. And then comes, well, how much do you get paid? And I've noticed a lot of things going on, one of which is people doing very high-value work for absolutely nothing, people doing absolutely nothing of value and thinking they should be very highly paid. I guess it's not that's not that new, but it's certainly a new thing now in its own special way. I will make one shitty piece of digital art, and I'll become a millionaire by selling it as a non-fungible token. Anyway, clean sheets, decent water, actual food, try to know who grew some of it, nothing out of a deep fryer, okay, once a week. Do the right thing for your body, and you'll be healthy, and you will not need nanotechnology, you will not need injections every 90 days, you will not need to wave a QR code, you will not need to worry about whether... if your throat is scratchy, if you're going to end up on a ventilator, this is pure deception, and you do not need to fall for it. Okay, let's go to the mutable signs. The mutable signs get hotted up this year by a few different things. Three in particular, two of which involve Pisces, one of which involves Gemini. Otherwise, not that exciting. Changes in Sag or in Virgo going on. These are mostly smaller distant planet influences, but things get sparky starting in, let's see, when events, well, I've already got the clock set for that. April 14th, Mars reaches Pisces. So this is when we begin the like Pisces era of the Pisces sub era of the 2020s. Rather, the Mars sub-era of the 2020s, but there's a lot of Pisces involved, because first, Mars moves through Pisces and makes conjunctions one after the next to all of these things. Let's take a look at the Mars-Jupiter conjunction. What is that? So the spring is quite radical, particularly up and through mid-May. And this is mostly Mars moving through the quadrant from Pisces to Gemini. So we talked about Pisces at the beginning, and the Pisces factor in your chart is the safety, security, comfort factor, the confidence factor in terms of your emotional confidence. Your emotional body is symbolized in the fourth in Pisces. And there's a collection of things going on there now. There's Nessus, there's Jupiter, there's going to be Jupiter, there is Neptune, there is Borsisi, there is one more important factor. The question, though, is what is true for you and how you determine what is true for you. This is a good question. Most people determine what's true based on what they want to feel is true, therefore that is true, damn you if you interfere with my feeling of what is true with any information. So Mars is going to push you for specifics, and it may push you for specifics if you are starting to feel insecure in some way that you haven't felt in a long time, and if it should any turmoil erupt in your home. I'm not saying it will, but there are people of all signs who are in domestic partnerships with issues. Now's the time to take action. For everyone with a Sag chart, there's going to be some family discussion, and so you may have to sweat it out a bit during this. What are we looking at here? Position, Mars, during this late spring era with Mars going through your fourth. And remember that a lot of what Mars is stirring up is old stuff, not new stuff. And so whose is it? If it's old, well, how old is it? Is it an antique? Needs to be dusted off and evaluated and maybe taken to the appraiser? Do you want it? Are you living out your grandmother's drama? Great-grandmother's drama? What's going on? So that happens. Then let's just follow Mars around the zodiac and we'll get to it. So I think that my assessment here is, after now I've read this these charts like 12 times, that the Mars transit through Pisces starting in April has got everything to do with Mars retrograde in Gemini. They're on the mutable cross. And so Mars, when it moves through Pisces, and it drives an inquiry into safety, security, confidence. Do you feel safe in your home? Do you feel safe with your family? Do you feel like you belong where you are? Fourth house issue is directly related to Mars retrograde in the seventh house that's coming up much later in the year. Mars enters Aries right at the same time as the moon, and soon after Jupiter on May 24th. Now, this is almost a total antidote to all that was going on in the fourth. And so what I suggest you do up through May 24th is be with yourself when it comes to the confidence and security issue. When Neptune is present in any region of your chart, it creates a vast blind spot. This is going to be an interesting topic when I get to Pisces in a minute, in the next episode of this serial drama. But where there is Neptune, there is the question of, is this true at all? Or can I even see what's going on? Neptune represents a blind spot. And to address that blind spot, first of all, it helps if you know it's there. Second, it helps to run your perception through various filters to see what you're missing when you look with normal vision, or you know, look on infrared, look on this scale, look on that scale. So you need to keep switching your vision to make sure that you can see things clearly. And also, one last thing with Mars in Pisces is the urgency of removing toxic substances from your home. Any kind of toxic substances whatsoever. They may be drugs, they may be paints, they may be insecticides, they may be needless dyes, they may be needless odors coming out of various things. Now's the time to go free and clear Dr. Bronner's, to get rid of every possible chemical that you can get rid of from your home. And just get it down to cleaning with, you know, vinegar and scrubbing with salt. And then, like, okay, maybe we've got to add a little Ajax to the equation. But most homes are way overstuffed with toxins. Okay, so all that fourth, Mars fourth, then Mars enters the fifth in this very exciting moment in May, which is Jupiter enters, the moon enters, Mars enters, big time. The shift is toward the creative. The shift is toward a more bold approach. It's a much more confident time. Late spring, late autumn down Oz, much more adventurous and bold time. Okay, so this moves along, and Jupiter now has begun its all-important journey through Aries. This is a real lift for you. You want to take this ride as far as you can take it, and really make the most of every moment that Jupiter is in Aries, and you get a big boost from Jupiter and Mars being in Aries for a long time. The Jupiter-Mars conjunction takes place in Aries, not in Pisces. This is really good for you. Fire stuff is really good for you. You have important points of grounding, and you have warnings about where you might not have them, i.e., this is not about trusting your gut. It's more like a rational analysis, but then suddenly you're in this territory where you can really experiment and play, and this lasts a while. And Jupiter will be back. Next, let's see, when Jupiter enters Taurus, Mars enters Taurus, that's July 5th. So now here we get into territory where, first of all, do not take threats to your health that seriously, unless they come with eat kimchi and miso. Oh, and do you have good water? And have you been to the farmer's market lately? And maybe you should know the guy who raised the chicken that you're going to eat. Okay, so and that this will keep you busy as at work also. This is a lot of like, let's get some shit done. Mars Taurus 6th. Okay, get enough rest and all that stuff. Now, when things get interesting and we're back on the mutable cross is when Mars enters Pisces. This is on August the 20th. And sorry, a lot of things here. Mars enters Gemini. Mars is, in our story, has already been through Pisces, and it's been through Aries. It's been through Taurus. Now it's going to enter Gemini, but it's going to be talking to the Mars Pisces phase that is coming right up. Okay. When Mars gets to Gemini, this is an angular house for you, like the fourth, but it's even more prominent because it's the seventh. It's your opposite sign. It's your environment. It's the world you see and walk around in, and it's your concept of relationships, your concept of partnerships, and it is the actual partnerships that you have, and it's the seventh. In my experience, and every astrologer has to come up with a concept of the houses, and some are more exciting than others, is that all the houses represent environments, but the seventh represents your normal waking environment generally. Walking around down the street, what do you see? Talking to people, who do you experience? Much of that's projected out of the first. It's a result of your state of mind, but it's the environment that's right there. It's not a special environment. Mars entering this environment is going to stir the pot and compel you to see things in entirely new ways. And if you're feeling frustrated, you want to shift your viewpoint to that of the other, shift your viewpoint to that of your partner, shift to your partner's ex, shift it to anything but what you would normally have it be. Mars is going to be in your seventh for 7 months. So it goes from late August way out to March of 2023, March 25th, 2023. So when Mars retrograde, which is rare, it's only retrograde 9% of the time. I have an expanded concept of Mars of any inner planet retrograde, which is that the process is the entire time the planet is in that sign. I have to modify that when the retrograde jumps signs like all the Mercury retrogrades do this year. All of which, by the way, start in air signs and wind up in earth signs. And Mercury retrogrades do tell you a lot about the story of your relationships because Mercury is your relationship planet. It doesn't necessarily make it especially easy because things of a Mercury nature are mercurial, but along comes Mars. Mars is going to turn up the temperature. It's going to make any conflict more apparent. So it's not like it's necessarily starting conflict, though there are going to be those agents provocateurs coming in, but it's more about seeing the underlying or concealed conflict that was there. And with Gemini, I think we're going to definitely need anger management for a lot of people and addressing this compassion fatigue issue that we have. Our communications under the influence of digital are already contentious enough. They are far too contentious, where like any meek hint of anything can start war. Now, the nice thing about the timing of Mars retrograde in Gemini is that it is happening after a period of eclipses in Gemini, Sagittarius, which is now just ending. The eclipses have just moved on to the Taurus-Scorpio axis, where they will be for another 18 months. So you've been through a lot of relationship shakeups already. So you at least have a body of experience and knowledge associated with looking closely at relationships, and things that were loose have probably already fallen off the cart, and that the people in your life are people that you want there. But Mars retrograde is going to test that. And it is likely that any relationship that you're in is going to go through a period of trial. And one of the things to do is to make sure that you have good communication with people and that your communication habits are good. Are you responsive? Do you go silent? Do you make judgments that you don't share? Do you find out who people are? Do you engage yourself with them and ask questions? These are all good communication habits. There can be no ghosting or any of this usual type of digital avoidance stuff with Mars retrograde in Gemini, of all signs, involving communication, and still be sane, because you can't cut off from people and still have the situation be in any way helpful, fruitful, or beneficial. One of the last things I'll talk about is this matter of having the right friends. I have never seen a rearrangement of the social environment like I have seen in the past 2 years. Almost everyone has lost very close friends, and almost everyone has lost a relative, not to a health issue, but to a judgment of some kind. And you could be one of these people who's lost a bunch of your people, and you are in a great position to recolonize the social environment. You have Libra in the 11th. The 11th is one of the best houses of them all. Fifth is right there with it. They're on the same axis. So Libra on the 11th is saying that you are very naturally social. Gemini is brilliant at this also. It's a similar phenomenon, but you are a good diplomat. You understand the need for inclusion in social environments, but you're also on a mission of and can certainly consecrate this as what would be very fruitful for you and the people around you, a mission of finding sane people who are able to reason. So your friends, the actual friends, your actual social group that you are the most likely to stabilize with are people capable of a reasoning process that you can follow, and you're capable of a reasoning process that they can follow. And I don't mean to sound like it's all going to be so reasonable. We're all going to be like a bunch of math majors at a cocktail party or something. Like, oh, that would be, who knows? It could be really exciting. But by reasonable, I mean the ability to reason, exercised as a thing that is good, that is needed, that is a social value. This is not strictly about agreeing, right? It's about how we think things through. And you get to take leadership there. You also get to take some leadership on the things that that nobody wants to talk about. And when you get to one of those things that nobody wants to talk about, I would encourage you to do your small part to keep the conversation open. Of course, with Aquarius on the 3rd and Saturn in Aquarius, having an open mind is the kind of thing that it's worth working at every day. and having the self-reflective ability to notice when you were involved in some kind of a social or intellectual transaction where you closed your mind. Had you only had your mind open, you might have seen that. You might have noticed that. You might have observed that. Ah, but it wasn't. So score yourself. How did you do today on the open-minded question? Did you embrace the possibilities? Do you believe in the possibilities? Do you see people differently as they grow and change? Do you notice your growth and change? Not necessarily just shedding the entire past, but incrementally. You move through life, you learn things. Well, how do you know you had that encounter with that person? What did that teach you about the way that you want to be? The sound of galaxies. All right. I bid you thanks and good night. Thank you particularly for the time you've invested in listening. You may write to me if you have any questions. And I encourage the use of the rising sign. And if you cannot afford it and you want it, write to me, efc@planetwaves.net. And we'll send out an offer. I want to make sure everyone can hear their rising sign. Because between those two, sun and rising, you pretty much get a composite and you put it all together. All right. On that note, thank you again. And bye for now.